Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. A six-member legislative panel in February whittled from 93 to 10 the nominees up to become Ohio's new representative in the National Statuary Hall in Washington. It's up to the rest of Ohio to decide the winner, and we'll tell you how to do that and tell you all about the nominees this hour. We have three guests to help out. Todd Kleismet, he is the Director of Government Relations for the Ohio Historical Society. Todd, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Ann.
Also, Stephanie Booth, she is a history professor at Kent State University. She recently published Buckeye Women, The History of Ohio's Daughters. Stephanie, glad you could be with us.
Thank you very much.
And Drew Caton, he is a history professor at Miami University in Oxford. Drew, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
Todd, I guess let's start out with you. You know, the generals, the National Statuary Hall collection in the U.S. Capitol is made up of statues donated by states to honor notables in their history. There are 100 statues, two for each state. Ohio's James Garfield will remain, and the William Allen statue will go. I have to admit, when I was there some years ago, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago, I had no idea who William Allen was anyways, but why does he have to go? Why the change? And I know that Ohio, this isn't the first time a state's had to change statues,
Sure. A few years ago, a group of legislators decided that they wanted to take advantage of a new congressional law that allowed a process whereby states, at their discretion, can change who represents their state in Statuary Hall. So a group of legislators simply decided that William Allen, who was probably not very well known to 21st century Ohioans, ought to come back home, and that his pro-slavery politics from the 19th century probably didn't best reflect Ohio's values today. So they decided that they were going to undertake this process to replace him.
You know, I couldn't figure out why he was in there in the first place, though. That was one thing I was having a hard time with. What are the criteria? What is Ohio looking for this time?
Well, I think what Ohio is looking for currently is simply someone who best represents the Ohio story, represents Ohio's values, and someone that has broad public support. And when Ohioans are in Statuary Hall visiting in Washington, D.C., that they'll know and be proud of whomever it is that has chosen to replace William Allen.
Okay. So what was the process for all of this? How did it start and where are we at in the process? How will it end?
Yeah, that's the thing that I think is neat about this is I think the legislators could have just decided, you know, we're just going to close the doors and make a decision on who we think we ought to send to Washington. And instead, they've done just the opposite. They've fully engage the public in a process that's been, I don't know how long it's been, but it's been well over a year where they've taken a lot of testimony. They've had special presentations made to them. They have traveled around the state to learn more and deeply engage in communities and organizations and advocates for lots and lots of various Ohioans. So after that process, they ended up getting close to 100 different suggestions or nominations of one kind or another. So they had a very tough decision in February to decide from the close to 100 people to take it down to 10, which obviously they've done at this point. So what they are now interested in doing is, you know, further delving into this and asking Ohioans to weigh in and see who they want to represent them.
And how do they do that?
Well, we've set up a process whereby most of the Ohio Historical Society sites in Ohio, there's 31 that are participating and five additional sites. The Ohio State House is a voting location, the Cincinnati Museum Center and the Hewlett Center in southern Ohio, as well as the Western Reserve Historical Society and Hale Farm. Up in the Cleveland area are also voting sites. So there's 36 sites throughout the state. We're hoping that people will go to a historic site or museum to cast their vote between now and June 12th, or they can also vote through a process online. We have a website, www.legacyforohio.org, where people can also get resources to either vote online or to send in their vote through the mail.
And they can go there and see who to vote for in the first place.
If they go to legacyforohio.org, they can go there and get all the information that they need.
Okay, we'll post that on our website, legacyforohio.org. You can go to WOSU.org/allsides to get that link whenever you want. Now, this was 10 whittled down from 93, so probably some pretty famous people didn't make it into the top 10. I know that John Glenn was nominated, for example, but he's still living.
Right.
Was that a criteria that they be deceased?
Yes, they must be deceased.
They must be deceased.
So this is not something you want to be eligible for.
Okay.
But nevertheless, there you have it.
Okay. And who else? Who else didn't make it that, you know, was notable?
Oh, boy.
Before we move on to the ones that did make it.
Oh, there's a whole lot of Ohioans, and some of them famous, some of them not so famous. But there were a lot of people, very people that most Ohioans would think were obscure, yet many other famous Ohioans. Jim Rhodes is one that comes to mind. Okay. A lot of Ohioans are familiar with him. A lot of people may not be as familiar with someone like John Parker, who was active on the Underground Railroad in Ripley, Ohio. And boy, 80 to 90 others all over the state, men, women, Native Americans, you name it. There was, and that's, I think, what is really what we're trying to highlight here is the rich diversity of Ohio's history and the people that that contributed to that history.
Drew, Stephanie, was this something that was being discussed among yourselves in the history circles in Ohio?
Well, at least at Kent State, I have to admit, no, it wasn't. But again, it was one of those things that I was kind of following through the through the newspaper, and it's been interesting kind of to watch the politicking for people's candidates as how they've come forward. So it's they've been very interesting that way to watch.
When you heard Stephanie about this process or decision to replace the statue, did someone occur to you immediately, or do you not want to come out in favor of anything particularly at this point?
Well, I have to admit that one of the candidates that is on there was one that I thought of originally, but then thinking that she was fairly obscure to those of those that didn't know the women's suffrage movement in Ohio, thinking maybe she wouldn't be on the list. So when I saw Harriet on the list, I was quite pleased.
That'd be Harriet Taylor Upton.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She was a prominent suffragist who helped lay the groundwork for passage of the 19th Amendment,
right.
Woo-hoo, the woman's right to vote. Mm-hmm. Drew, Caton, how about you? What did you think when you heard about this? Was it all the buzz in the history department?
No. I think what's really great about this process, and it's a terrific process, is the public discussion that takes place. I mean, Ohio has been said a lot of times is a very diverse state geographically and in all kinds of ways. And so this is one of those rare occasions when the citizens of Ohio actually get to talk about what's important to them, because really that's what's going on here in some levels, is that when you decide whom you want to commemorate, who are the people in your past that you want to celebrate and make a big deal out of, what you're really talking about is what you think is important about this place that's Ohio and the kinds of things that you want people to take away from it. So I love the fact that we're having a public process and voting and people making arguments for various different people, because I think that's a very healthy discussion to have in a democracy.
And it's really cool because you don't have to be 18 to vote for this, too.
Well, that's absolutely right. I mean, as a historian, it's very hard for me to make these kinds of distinctions, because there are literally dozens of people who are easily qualified. I don't think there's anyone on this list of 10 names that would be horrible if it ended. That person ended up, but they often represent different aspects of Ohio's past, and that's what makes it difficult to make a decision. Is that it is a diverse place. There are lots of different people and different ways of thinking and different things that we want to value, and it is like an election in and of itself. You're trying to figure out, okay, who is the person who reaches what the broadest section of people find to be the part of Ohio's past that they really want to emphasize.
And I want to invite folks out there. I know there's a lot of advocates for the 10 nominees out there wanting to call in and talk, and I welcome them. I welcome anybody to call in and talk about the nominees and who they might like. You don't have to be an official advocate. Give us a call at 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. But I'll tell you, we're expecting a lot of calls, and I'm going to do my very, very best to make sure it's balanced, it's equal, it's fair. I just found out that apparently OSU is backing Jesse Owens, the great track star. So, I didn't know that. And I'm not, I swear, you know, I didn't know that. I have no bias one way or the other. So, but tell us what you think and make your pitch on the air on All Sides with Dan Fisher. Let's just run through them very quickly so people know. And also you can go to, they can go to that same website, can't they, Todd, and get the list and read along with us if you want.
Right.
Go to WOSU.org/allsides and click on that link, and you can follow along. The first one I'll start out with is, I guess, in alphabetical order, James Mitchell Ashley, an abolitionist. What do we know about him? Anybody? Anything?
Well, he was very prominent during the Civil War and was a leading advocate for the abolition of slavery. And I think part of the impulse there is that William Allen, whose statue is coming down, was not a prominent supporter of abolition. In fact, quite the contrary, and was a major critic of Abraham Lincoln when he was president of the United States, which, of course, was actually a fairly popular opinion in Ohio at the time. You know, we tend to think about the past, and everybody loved Lincoln when he was president, but of course lots of Ohioans did not like the Civil War and so on. So I think part of the appeal there is that if you were looking for a 19th century politician who was kind of the opposite of William Allen in his attitudes towards slavery, then Ashley would qualify.
Thomas Edison. Just flip on the light and you'll know what we're talking about, right? A native of Milan, Ohio, world-famous inventor, a highly successful businessman. I don't think much more needs to be said about that at this point until we hear from the advocates, of course. You know, one thing I wanted to stop here real quick, we're going to have to take a break in a sec anyways, and then we'll come back and go through the list. But not everybody was born in Ohio, and not everybody died in Ohio. How do you determine, Todd, the connection, or is that in the eye of the beholder?
It truly is in the eye of the beholder, and I think not just in Ohio, but if you looked at all of the other 49 states, that, you know, the tie to the state should be obvious, and really that's about it. You know, if they made their career, they were born there, they have some link or tie to that state. You know, it's up to the discretion of the state as to who best suited for that.
Okay. Just to whip through this list real quick, Ulysses S. Grant, obviously commanding general of the Union Army during the American Civil War. Jesse Owens, as I mentioned before, one of the world's greatest track and field athletes. William McCullough. Is that my pronouncing that word?
Yes.
Name right? He was a World War II veteran and a civil rights activist who served in the U.S. House of Representatives from Piqua for more than 25 years. Judith Resnick. Dr. Judy Resnick, she was an American astronaut. She died aboard the Discovery's – well, no, she died aboard the explosion on the Challenger, was posthumously awarded the Congressional Space Medal of Honor in 2004. Albert Sabin, MD, Dr. Albert Sabin, he – during his 30-year tenure at the faculty of the University of Cincinnati College of Medicine, he developed the oral vaccine that eradicated polio in the United States and virtually worldwide. Harriet Beecher Stowe, of course, an author and abolitionist whose famous work, Uncle Tom's Cabin, is credited with exposing the evils of slavery and changing the tide of public opinion. She lived in Cincinnati for many years. Harriet Taylor Upton, as we mentioned before, prominent suffragist. The Wright brothers, Wilbur and Orville, Dayton's Wright brothers, of course, are the pioneers in aviation. We do have some questions about that, and are they going to get a joint statue if they're selected? Maybe we'll come back to that when we return after this break on All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
An exotic expense chit challenges RNC chair Michael Steele and Sarah Palin and John McCain together again.
When you think about that first tea party, shoot, some may claim that John was there at that first Tea Party meeting.
I'm Neil Conan. Political junkie Ken Rudin joins guest host Rebecca Roberts next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation begins at 2 o'clock this afternoon right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. 49 degrees in downtown Columbus at 1021. Sunshine today and a high near 70. Clear skies tonight, a low of 48 degrees. Sunshine for Thursday as well and a high of 75.
Support for WOSU comes from Fast Signs, using technology to offer a concept-to-completion process for customer sign-buying needs. More information about Fast Signs is available in Westerville at 890-3821 and Columbus at 860-0103.
All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about who should be nominated or who should be voted in as who should stand for Ohio in the National Statuary Hall in Washington, D.C., in the U.S. Capitol there. Ohioans, all Ohioans, and I guess anyone who can write their name or sign their name can vote, so there's no age limit, vote and decide the winner. The deadline is June. It's in, I think, June 12th.
It is.
Now, we do have a caller. They want to know. We're going to move on to the advocates of the different nominees in a second. But I just want to know, what's the cost, Todd, and how is it going to be paid for?
Yeah, and the cost is expected to be in the hundreds of thousands of dollars range. The money will be raised privately sometime following the conclusion of the selection of the person. There will be a commission set up. There actually is a commission that's being formed that will be charged with private fundraising and arranging for the transportation of having William Allen come back to Ohio and so forth.
Okay, 614-292-8513, or you can email us on allsides@wosu.org. I'll be keeping track as I take these calls. Let's take the first one from Lynette. You are advocating for Harriet Beecher Stowe, and just so make sure we have time enough for everybody, can you keep it, you know, to about a minute?
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Lynette.
First, I want to say Harriet Beecher Stowe is the perfect opposition to Governor Allen because she's also an abolitionist. And she wrote the best-selling book in the entire 19th century. In 100 years, it was the best-selling book, and eradicated slavery, and Lincoln credited her with starting the Civil War. The other thing I want to put Harriet Beecher Stowe in context is there are only 9 women in Statuary Hall right now. The latest was Helen Keller from Alabama put in 2009. Well, for little girls walking in Statuary Hall, which are 51% of the population's women, and there are only 9 women statues, when you walk in and see that, it's overwhelming. 91 men, 9 women, and it would be great to put a woman in Statuary Hall to represent half the population. And I think Harriet Beecher Stowe is the perfect choice because she did her work there. And if she wasn't for Ohio, she wouldn't have been able to write Uncle Tom's Cabin.
Because it was from living in Ohio that she learned about the evils
slavery,
of slavery.
And because of the Underground Railroad mm-hmm. and people crossing the Ohio River
right.
from Kentucky. So Ohio is essential to her work, where Thomas Edison did his work in New Jersey and in Florida. And he did not do his work in Ohio. He left the state as a child.
Okay. Lynette, thanks for your call.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for listening. You know, it is an interesting question about the makeup of the Statuary Hall overall. Stephanie,
I would have to agree with the caller there. That, I mean, as you do walk in, it is overwhelmingly male, and certainly as we unsurface the women's history throughout the United States, I think that we could begin to reevaluate not just from Ohio's perspective, but also otherwise as to what women really deserve to have a national recognition for all the work that they had done. And so I think Ohio does have that opportunity at this point.
You know, I suppose that could be the case for a lot of different subgroups, Native Americans.
Mm-hmm.
Drew?
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. I mean, I think that's the glory and the problem here is that it is overwhelmingly a white male area. And so I think anything that you can do to highlight the contributions of women, of African Americans, of Native Americans, and so on, is a terrific thing. The problem is there's only one statue.
Well, two per state, but well, there's only one this time.
Exactly.
Exactly. Let's take another call. This one from Brady, and you want to advocate on behalf of Orville and Wilbur Wright, which brings us to that question, of course, Brady, of what if they were the winners? How would we depict them in Statuary Hall? Todd, have you anyone thought about that?
Well, I know it's it is a matter that the Statuary Committee is working with the architect of the Capitol. There currently aren't any statues of more than one person, so I know that that's an issue that's being discussed and looked at. But Ohio's determined that if they want to send two people to represent them, that that's what they're going to do.
Okay, Brady, what do you have to say about Orville and Wilbur Wright?
Well, thanks for taking the call.
Well, welcome to the show.
We certainly there is a way from a carving scenario that they can have both brothers in one statue, but we're advocating for this because most definitely one of the most significant technological achievements and developments in human history was aviation and the perfection of it, which the Wright brothers conducted. And lived most of their lives here in Ohio, conducted all that research, and solved the mystery of human flight in Ohio. Now, they did some of their experiments in other areas, but the tie to Ohio is strong and deep, as opposed to the for multiple years they were doing this work, as opposed to just living a few years in the state. The Wrights were definitely Ohioans. And then, the other piece is the continuing effort and continuing work that is here in Ohio from an economic development standpoint that started in Ohio, continues in development in Ohio with the work out at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, the work with NASA, and the aerospace industry in the state. It's a continuing reminder of Ohio's influence in aviation, in aerospace internationally. And it's one of those things that, as someone who used to work in the Capitol building, folks are flying through those hallways and don't have time to, there really aren't any plaques or anything that describe or try to give any kind of information about why their statue is there. You want somebody who is instantly recognizable, and the Wright brothers certainly hold that, international figures, internationally recognizable as folks, and I think it's something that would serve Ohio well, that everybody realizes that Ohio is the birthplace of aviation.
Okay. Thank you, Brady.
Sure.
That is an interesting, Brady brought up that question about, what constitutes an Ohioan, and is it just about a matter of being here for a few years or being here for many years and doing the substance of the work that's being, they're noted for in Ohio? Do you think that matters, Drew or Stephanie?
I think it has to be part of the equation. I think what Todd said earlier, is, whether a substantial part of your life is identified with Ohio is probably the main criteria. The problem, of course, is people can't agree on what necessarily makes an Ohioan. That's as I said earlier, what's really terrific about this, and at the same time, no doubt, very frustrating for a lot of people, is it's very hard to sort of pick one face and say this is Ohio. That face just doesn't exist.
Yeah, I thought when I saw the list, that was kind of the first thing that came to my mind. Because, again, I have to say, I'm not a native Ohioan. I was born and raised in Illinois. I've been here for 25 years now. And so, am I now an Ohioan? And so, with that, looking at this list, we have, people that, spent their, childhood but then left and never came back. We've got, individuals that spent, the majority of their lives here and anywhere in between. And so it's, what do Ohioans feel, best represents them through, these individuals and what they've done. So, as I said, that is part of what should go into the consideration as people are looking at, who they might vote for.
Yep.
This, by the way, if I can just jump in, is a problem that's an old problem. I mean, who counts where presidents are from? Mm-hmm. It's an age-old mm-hmm. problem in this way. You know, Ohio takes William Henry Harrison and Benjamin Harrison, and Virginia and Indiana would dispute that. I mean,
and just about everybody grabs onto Lincoln.
That is correct. So, you know, this is, as a historian, I think one of the things that's interesting is to watch this process play out in ways that are pretty familiar.
David is going to take a call from David now. If you would like to call, 614-292-8513. We're talking about which Ohioan, and depending how you define Ohioan, it could vary, should represent or stand for Ohio in the National Statuary Hall in the U.S. Capitol. David, you have some questions about what represents an authentic Ohioan, or some comments.
Well, my comment was, what is it like now in Statuary Hall and the 50 states that are represented there? Both subjects and only 15 states were born in the state they represent. None of the subjects or 17 states were born in those states. And the other 18 states are a 50-50 split. So I think the matter of where born is a non-interest, actually, based on the current population, which is determined by the individual states making their own decisions. So we have a lead there that says, need not be born in the state for sure. The majority were not born in the states they represent, the majority of individuals.
Of course, you know, back in the day, a lot of the states didn't exist.
Well, given that, and today, of course, is a huge mobility of mm-hmm. people. How could you say Judy Resnick, born here, but she spent the balance of her career in space and outside here, but you wouldn't say she's not an Ohioan. She mm-hmm. didn't have Grant the same way. Ulysses Grant was mm-hmm. born in Ohio, but he made his name outside Ohio, and big time. So I think where they're born is of little importance, plus or minus, for their candidacy.
Okay. Thank you for your call.
Thank you.
Take care. 614-292-8513. And we'll hear from Don now about, you want to talk about Edison, Thomas Edison. Don?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah. Really pleased to have this opportunity. Thomas Edison, of course, was the greatest inventor the world has ever known. And about, you know, their ties and so forth, there should absolutely be no doubt that Edison's roots of genius were growing deep in Buckeye soil. Milan and Ohio were forever his hometown and state. The legacy of Edison is everywhere present in Ohio. He married an Ohio girl. He was married in Akron, Ohio. He has three of his siblings are buried in the Milan Cemetery here. Members of the Edison family still serve on the Edison Birthplace Museum board and live in a nearby family farm. Edison's General Electric Company was established in Cleveland in 1911, and it was Ohio's first industrial park. Currently, our Ohio Department of Development sponsors several Edison technology centers around the state. In fact, just a couple months ago, they released $9.6 million in Thomas Edison grants. I believe that, you know, during these difficult times in Ohio and America, we really need to rediscover Edison, and we need to reinstill into our youth the faith in our future. Edison is a stimulus link we need for Ohio and America and the entire global economy. He's what I call a common denominator for all mankind, and he's respected throughout the world. Edison represents the heart and soul of Ohio. When we have visitors that come to Statuary Hall, you know, it wouldn't only be Ohioans. This would be something that would be very critical to leaders from all over the world. Edison would be the most recognized individual in Statuary Hall.
Okay.
You know, in my opinion.
All right. Well, Don, you're from Edison's birthplace, right? You're calling
right.
from there. Thanks for your call. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Take care. We are talking about who should represent the state of Ohio in National Statuary Hall in our U.S. Capitol. We're replacing former Governor Allen a long time ago, anti-abolitionist, I guess, now to be replaced maybe in the next couple of years, Todd? Is there a timeline on this?
There isn't a real strong timeline. We believe that once the selection's made this summer, that we can set into place a process whereby the statue is probably replaced in 2011, 2012, probably, hopefully, at the latest.
We have heard from folks in favor of Thomas Edison now, Harriet, Beecher Stowe, the Wright brothers, Wilbur and Orville. I've got an email from Kelly, who votes for Judith Resnick, says, quite suitable as she represents the nation's fundamental spirit for learning and exploration. And now let's hear from Mike about William McCullough. Hi, William.
It's Mike.
Mike, sorry.
Yeah, thank you for allowing me to be part of the show.
No problem.
On behalf of the Friends of William McCulloch, we believe Bill McCulloch truly represents the best of Ohio. He's the story of born and raised in rural Ohio. He attended Worcester College and the Ohio State University College of Law, was a graduate there. He went on to actually serve in World War II, and then he served with the Ohio House Representative for 12 years, and he was in the Ohio Congress from the old 4th Congressional District for 25 years. He was very involved with civil rights. He proposed civil rights legislation in the 1950s and was instrumental in the passage of the civil rights bills in 1964, 65, and 1968. And he was a constitutional scholar. He believed that human rights were more important than normal political gain. And we believe that he really tells Ohio's story from that standpoint.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mike.
Thank you.
Thanks for your call. There are 10 nominees. Now it's been whittled down from 93. James Mitchell Ashley, abolitionist and prominent political and business leader in Toledo. Thomas Edison speaks for himself, world-famous inventor. Ulysses S. Grant, commanding general of the Union Army during the American Civil War. Jesse Owens, one of the world's greatest track and field athletes, and also a member of the Ohio State University track team. William McCulloch, I just got the right pronunciation for that, World War II veteran and civil rights activist who served in the U.S. House of Representatives from Piqua for more than 25 years. Judith Resnick, Dr. Judith Resnick, an American astronaut, died in the explosion of the Challenger. Albert Sabin, M.D., he developed the oral vaccine that eradicated polio in the United States and virtually worldwide. Harriet Beecher Stowe, an author and abolitionist, her most famous work, Uncle Tom's Cabin. Harriet Taylor Upton, prominent suffragist, and Wilbur and Orville Wright, the Wright brothers, who were the pioneers in aviation. I've got some calls for people advocating for folks that probably have been whittled off the list by now. So I want to kind of take calls from folks that want to talk about the 10 that have made it to the final, you know, the final 10 that have made it through this far. When we return, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Whenever it's on, the sound is so compelling that I can't not listen to it. I mean, you can close your eyes, you know, but you can't close your ears. And I feel connections with people that I'll never meet, that I'll never see, that are halfway around the world in different countries. My name is Rob Ellis, and WOSU is my source for stepping through the looking glass into new worlds, ideas, and possibilities.
You're listening to WOSU 820 NPR News. In just about 20 minutes, Hour 2 of All Sides will be here. The U.S. Constitution requires there be a count of every resident in the United States every 10 years. We'll hear about the history of the census and a range of issues surrounding the 2010 census. With census historian Margot Anderson, that discussion begins at 11 o'clock, right here on All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Support for WOSU comes from The Other Paper, Columbus's news and entertainment weekly, on newsstands every Thursday and online at theotherpaper.com.
50 degrees in downtown Columbus at 10:40. Sunshine today, a high near 70 degrees. Clear skies tonight, a low of 48 degrees. More sunshine for Thursday and a high of 75.
Support for WOSU comes from the Physicians Free Clinic and Voluntary Care Network, providing charity medical care for Central Ohio's uninsured patients. More about joining the Columbus Medical Association Foundation and supporting the clinic is at goodhealthcolumbus.org.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Joining me today to talk about who should become Ohio's new representative in the National Statuary Hall in Washington, D.C., is Stephanie Booth. She's a history professor at Kent State University. Stephanie, again, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Also, Drew Caton. He's a history professor at Miami University. Drew, glad you could be with us.
Happy to be here.
And Todd Kleismet. He is director of government relations for the Ohio Historical Society. Todd, glad you could join me in the studio.
Great. Thank you.
Hey, Drew, what are the political ups and downs of this process? And if you know, how has it been decided in the past?
Well, I mean, back in the 1880s, when Garfield and Allen were originally chosen, it was chosen pretty much by the legislature. And I think one of the things Todd emphasized earlier that's really important, that this is a much more open public process. But it also shows that, you know, when these two men were chosen in the 1880s, different things mattered to Ohioans than matter now. I don't think there would have been any notion of anybody but a white male at that point. And political parties were really important. So people not only voted for Republicans and Democrats, but they identified with them in their daily lives in ways that I don't know a lot of Ohioans do anymore. So, you know, Allen ended up there mainly because Garfield had just been assassinated. So he was kind of a popular emotional choice. And he was a Republican, so you needed a Democrat to balance that out. And Allen was kind of a grand old man of the Democratic Party in Ohio, and that's why he got in there. The danger with all of this, of course, is that, you know, who's popular or who seems to represent Ohio right now may be someone that you don't want there in 40 or 50 years. And Allen's a classic example of that. Someone who just seemed at the time to be an obvious choice, and there wasn't much controversy about it. But 100-plus years later, people wonder, how did he ever get there in the first place?
And the good news is that states can now change their statute.
Yeah, I think that's a good thing.
Okay, let's take some more calls. Jack, you want to talk about Jesse Owens?
I do.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. First, you know, I want to say that I think the process so far has just been wonderful, and I think this debate is healthy, and I'm really happy that we've taken it out to the people to decide this. But I'm for Jesse. You know, Jesse, he's one of the greatest track athletes of all time, and that's what most people know about him. But Gerald Ford gave him the Presidential Medal of Freedom, and you don't get that for being a great track athlete. Gerald Ford called him a diplomat for humanity, and it's such a perfect title for Jesse. You know, he went to the Hitler's Olympics, and make no mistake, Hitler viewed those as his Olympics. He modeled his Nazi rallies after the Olympic traditions. He planned to permanently move the Olympics to Germany once he'd conquered the world, and he certainly thought that the 1935 Olympics would be his showcase, that the world would see that Hitler was the way, his Aryan nation would be the way that the world should be run. And he went over there. He won his 4 gold medals, and he rallied America around him at a time when, you know, let's face it, racial harmony was not the norm in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And he won over the world. I mean, the German people sat there in the stadium with Hitler and cheered for Jesse Owens. And to this day, you know, some make the case that people across the pond are more inspired by Jesse Owens than perhaps even Ohioans. I mean, they just renamed the Olympic Stadium, the streets around the Olympic Stadium in Berlin for Jesse. And, you know, to have a little fun with the lady who called in from Harriet Beecher Stowe, no state has ever sent an African-American to Statuary Hall. And if you have to think of which state would be first and who that would be, I think Jesse makes a good case for the groundbreaking achievements he did in his life, that he would make a great representative.
All righty. Well, Jack, thanks for your call.
You're welcome.
Take care. That's right. There are no African Americans out of 100 statues. Kind of surprising, isn't it?
Well, and what's interesting too, with the comments that have been made, is what exactly is the purpose of the statue in Statuary Hall? People have been making it should be somebody that's recognizable to others. And I guess as an educator, I would also have to ask, well, is it possible then that there should be perhaps those that aren't quite as recognizable, and that's a teachable moment for for people.
That their achievement is what's the point?
Right. Mm-hmm. So I mean, it's kind of interesting. Of how do we perceive that statue, and what's the purpose of it?
Okay. Let's take another call, this time from Paul LaRue. You want to talk about James Ashley. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. James Ashley actually grew out of a class project that my students did, and we were talking about teachable moments. It's been a great project. James Ashley, when he was 17, was a conductor on the Underground Railroad while living at Portsmouth. But his real fame came when he was a congressman and he served as President Lincoln's floor manager. He lined up the votes and literally got the 13th Amendment passed. He was also the author of Emancipation for the District of Columbia. So he was very involved, he was appointed by the mayor of Cleveland to serve as one of Lincoln's pallbearers as Lincoln's body passed through Cleveland after the assassination.
Okay. James Mitchell Ashley, born 1822, died 1896, ardent abolitionist. Thank you. How did the kids like doing the project? What grade?
These were seniors in high school, and it was a great, because it wasn't somebody they were familiar with, but it was, as a teacher, it's always exciting to get students involved, and it gave them the opportunity to give testimony and to lobby, and, this is the kind of thing that gets students excited.
I was wondering, Todd Kleismet from Ohio Historical Society, how much the classroom's getting involved in this. Do you have any sense about that?
We do have some sense of it. We have heard from a number of educators all over Ohio about getting enthusiastic about this process, getting their students engaged one way or another. And we have been working with Paul and with other educators to get some educational resources out there, because we think that there just aren't enough opportunities for educators and students to get engaged in something like this, where it's a great teachable moment to really learn a lot about local history as opposed to international and national history. So this has been just a fantastic opportunity and a real teachable moment.
All righty. Paul LaRue, thank you for your call.
Thank you.
Take care. Let's see. We have Dr. Philip Russell, who is advocating for Dr. Albert Sabin. Dr. Russell, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here. The reason I'm advocating for Dr. Sabin is that he was a brilliant and dedicated research scientist who worked at the University of Cincinnati. And he was a pioneer in the developing science of virology. The work that made him most famous was the discovery and development of the oral polio vaccine, the vaccine that has eliminated poliomyelitis from all but one or two remaining countries in the world. He did the laboratory work at the University of Cincinnati, and remarkably, during the Cold War, he carried out large-scale field trials in the Soviet Union and taught the Russians how to manufacture his vaccine. He went on to test the vaccine in several other countries around the world, and as a result, the vaccine was adopted globally and used in the eradication program for poliomyelitis. And that was a truly remarkable, not only a scientific accomplishment, but a public health accomplishment. He was a really wonderful public health advocate. Interestingly enough, Dr. Sabin was in the Army during World War II, and he made some very interesting discoveries about the etiology of diseases that were affecting American troops, and he developed a vaccine against Japanese encephalitis that was used in the latter part of the war. Truly a remarkable scientist. He's been recognized by the United States Presidential Medal of Freedom and National Medal of Science. He was given awards by a couple of dozen countries internationally, and I think he's a remarkable example of a true a hero in science and in public health.
All righty, Dr. Russell, thank you for giving us a call and advocating for Albert Sabin.
You're welcome.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU. Just to let you know what we're talking about, in case you just tuned in, we're talking about who should represent the state of Ohio in the National Statuary Hall in our the U.S. Capitol. Everybody gets to vote come by June 12th. If you want to know how to do that, you can go to WOSU.org/allsides. We have a link there for you to go to learn more about this process. The nominees, it's been whittled from 93 to 10. The nominees are James Mitchell Ashley, Thomas Edison, Ulysses S. Grant, Jesse Owens, William McCulloch, Judith Resnick, Albert Sabin, Harriet Beecher Stowe, Harriet Taylor Upton, and the Wright brothers, Wilbur and Orville. We've heard from folks regarding the Wright brothers. Of course, we just heard from Dr. Russell about Albert Sabin, Judy Resnick, Harriet Beecher Stowe, William McCulloch, James Ashley, Thomas Edison, and Jesse Owens. We still haven't heard from anybody supporting Ulysses S. Grant, Harriet Taylor Upton. I think that's it, just those two. So we're looking for that right now. In the meantime, let's hear from Jonathan. You don't want this process to be abused, I think. Hmm? Yeah.
Yeah, I think, and you guys are looking for teachable moments, which I think is a great idea. But I think it'd be a mistake to use as a part of the factoring of this decision elements of political correctness, because I think it is just as teachable if the diverse group of a classroom walks into this hall and sees 100 white males or whatever, and you can teach them that, you know, in that era that's why that happened, and in this era this is a different era, and these people made this happen. But most importantly, I think that's important, but most importantly, I would also say that I think Ohio should pick someone who is internationally recognizable for singular events. And people, and there's only a couple people on that list that fit.
What do you mean by singular event? Like Dr. Sabin? Developing the vaccine?
I don't mean just singular, but although Sabin would be an all right choice, but he's not internationally recognizable. I'm thinking more innovative, world changing type event. I think the Wright brothers fit that. I think Edison fits that, and I think Jesse Owens fits that. So I would choose someone who, when people walk up or pass the statue quickly, they look over and they know that's Jesse Owens.
Okay. Well, thanks. Thanks a lot for giving us a call, Jonathan. I guess historians, Drew, Stephanie, that sense of world changing is sort of in the eye of the beholder, isn't it?
I think very much so, because, again, I mean, you could look at any of these individuals, and I think, and make a case historically as to, you know, what could or could not have happened if they hadn't accomplished the things they've done. So, yeah, it's all relative into, you know, what one you see as important, and what, again, going back to what one of the colleagues said, you know, what we're seeing important at this point in time, you know, in history, and, it's been said previously, things change over time. So in 50 years from now, would we be seeing, you know, the same thing?
See, Drew, do you think that that's the case when we talk about those teachable moments, that another one of the moments could be, hey, look how people used to think back in the day?
Well, yeah, you do a lot of teaching like that in the schools and university level. I mean, you try and use everything you can as a teachable moment in one way or another. I mean, it's a real dilemma, I think. We're talking about something here that's a little different from the classroom, though, because this is public history. This is people, as the caller said, who are going to come by probably pretty quickly and look at this, most of whom are not from Ohio, and many of whom won't even from the United States. And so for them, it's less a teachable moment, although I see value in that, than it is sort of instantly signature moment. Oh, this is Ohio. This person is Ohio. And, you know, from that perspective, somebody who is world famous for some event is somebody that people are going to recognize right away. But, I mean, as I've said before, and I agree with Stephanie, somebody that we think is really world famous right now may not be in 50 years. And that's the problem.
I guess I wonder, even though it's obvious to me, Albert Sabin is instantly recognizable, that may not be the case in a couple generations.
Right, and vice versa. I mean, I hate to use a particular name, but
well, I didn't mean to knock Sabin.
No, but I know, but I mean, I don't want to be sounding like I'm advocating for anyone.
Yeah.
But a lot of these 19th century people who don't seem very familiar to Ohioans today, whether it's Harriet Beecher Stowe, although I guess she's probably fairly familiar, mm-hmm. or Ashley or some of the rest of these, were actually well-known people. You know, I mean, instantly recognized people to many people in Ohio in the 1870s and the 1880s. And, you know, you could make the case that some of the more recent figures on the list right now, 100 years from now, maybe people who, you know, nobody in particular seems to remember. And so when you try and choose someone, you're trying to choose someone who not only I think is recognizable right away, but has staying power. And that's the real dilemma.
Okay, we had a caller a little while ago. They hung up, but they wanted to let us know that Rosa Parks is on track to be placed in the Statuary Hall. And
yeah.
I'm not quite sure for what – is that state of Michigan or is that another state?
Alabama, I would think.
Okay. And it's going to be put up before Ohio's new statue. So it's decided by special legislation put up by Jesse Jackson. That's why I'm questioning. I don't know.
Right.
You know what the process was there. So there will be an African American represented in the hall if that's something that's important. Of course, that's just one out of 100, but it's a start, I guess. Let's see. We have just about a minute and a half. Well, let's take one more call, Brian. You want to talk? You wanted to advocate for Jesse Owens. We've already had an advocate for Jesse Owens, but tell us what your experience was at Statuary Hall.
Well, I've been a little swayed, actually, since I've been listening. And I would actually move, not necessarily to Jesse Owens, but to, like some of the other callers were saying, someone less known. I've been to the Statuary Hall. It's beautiful. And we got a nice little education last November when we were there of some lesser-known people. So I think by putting someone who's lesser-known, you take them out of obscurity and hopefully get them on a track where people will want to know more about them. That's kind of my comment, is someone lesser known, not necessarily Jesse Owens,
okay. But
someone out of obscurity. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Brian, for calling. Thanks for listening. We're running out of time, so I have to say thank you to my guest, Todd Kleismet, Director for Government Relations at the Ohio Historical Society. Todd, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Ann. I've enjoyed it.
And also just remind folks if they want to get a link to the Ohio Historical Society in this process, wosu.org/allsides. And also, Drew Caton, Miami University history professor. Drew, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Ann, and thank you, Todd and Stephanie.
And Stephanie Booth, Kent State University Associate Provost and also a history professor there. Stephanie, thanks for joining us today.
I've enjoyed it.
This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.